It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
For the record, my dad's side of the family is from Trenton, not from northern New Jersey, so we didn't cross the border, and I'm not allowed to have cigars in the house. And Mrs. Soce's not Carmella. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a comment or a question, you can email me at msoce@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soce. Yes, I know it's from a TV show, but HBO series, in some cases, are better than a lot of films that are out there. And we're going to pay tribute to James Gandolfini later in the show. A very special dead people we like.
We like him.
We don't have... We definitely... Because we don't have time for dead people we don't like.
No, not at all.
So,
Zero time.
Zero dark 30. And the show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which you can check out at...
Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The man's voice you just heard is somebody who is recovering from watching Game 7. That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
So let's see. The heat. Look, the sun rised. Birds are out.
The sun rose.
And risen.
It has risen.
And Derek rose. And everything's okay. Life goes on.
Yeah, everything's fine.
So the heat have had three straight final appearances and two back-to-back titles.
Yep.
You know what that makes them? Pistons. Check out those records, fool.
Yep.
And apparently Birdman is Bill Laimbeer. No, that's an insult to the Pistons. All right. Also in studio with us, yes, every now and then this happens when theater and film collide. It's a musical based on one of the funniest films ever made. And we have one of the actors in. He's an Indianapolis theater staple, and we have him here. He's spending quality time with us before he has to go strap on the armor. That's Paul Hansen. How are you, Paul?
Hey there, ho there. I'm pretty good.
He is one of the actors in Spamalot, which is happening. Opened last weekend at the Athenaeum and is running this weekend and next weekend. And you should really go check it out. Especially if you have any Python in your soul, which everybody really should. Python and the blues. You have to have those in your soul. Or a little bit of music from Brazil.
Hey.
For what's happening on the cool down tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night is ladies' night on the cool down.
I thought every night was ladies' night on the cool down.
Tomorrow night is ladies' night on the cool down. Samba, bossa nova, modern Brazilian popular music, all from women of Brazil.
Are you still trying to get your lovely fiance to recreate the Herb Alpert album cover?
Oh, man. That was a good one.
Notice he doesn't answer. Mrs. Soce won't do it either. All right.
I forget what that album was.
Whipped Creams and Other Delights,
oh,
which
yes.
You are looking up right now as
you know
we speak. Because this is what he does occasionally when he's not engineering the show. He's Googling vintage chicks.
Yes, vintage.
Yeah.
See? Oh, yeah.
That's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay. All right, let's talk about movies, because this isn't album cover sociology.
But what an episode that would be.
Oh, boy. Yeah, album covers on radio. Terrific.
All right, this one album cover is really cool.
It's really cool. Now imagine this. Picture this, man. Check this out. All right, opening in theaters today, we have Josh Whedon's version of Much Ado About Nothing. That does not have any of the Avengers in it, and it was shot in his house, and it's in black and white. So it's been, let's see, 1993 was when my gosh, that's 20 years since the Kenneth Branagh film version. So I guess there's time for a new version of Much Ado About Nothing, so there's that. But we're going to start things off with Monsters University, or
yes.
as the Onion like to call it, When Mike Met Sully. Because Billy Crystal is a voice, and he's get it? Because he's...
Yeah, and it's... Yeah.
No. Yes, these are the monsters are back. It's a prequel. This is the time where they first meet in college. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen?
Hilarity ensues.
No, before hilarity ensues, they don't like each other.
Uh-uh.
No. And they don't even tell you. Mike's roommate originally is Randall. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. So I think we're gonna skip the trailer and just get right into it because
that's good because I don't even have it.
Yeah, because I didn't tell you to.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you to get it.
There we go.
And because I don't feel like breaking down World War Z's trailer because we've done that before. That's okay. So we have it's interesting because we have a prequel with two monsters, and they sound just like 70-year-old Billy Crystal and 60-year-old John Goodman, even though they're supposed to be college kids.
Maybe voices are different in the monster world.
Is that it?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Helen Mirren also shows up as a voice. John Krasinski, John Ratzenberger.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yes. You should look on IMDb and check out some of the cool names.
Okay.
All right. This has a special place. Well, Monsters, Inc. has a special place in my heart, as well as a lot of people's. A lot of folks, because in our house there were two films that Emma, the kids film correspondent, now put on hold. There were two films that she watched every day. It felt like for 8 months, and much to her credit, she alternated. I know there's a lot of parents out there that they have a kid that they'll watch one thing and one thing only. And I thank God, I thank whoever that it was Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo. It could have been Scooby-Doo. It could have been robots. It could have been Shark Tale. It could have been just some god-awful thing that she just latched onto. So, Emma, thank you for that.
Charlie Day is in this.
Yes. Yes.
And Steve Buscemi.
Well, yeah, of course. I just mentioned that. Buscemi's not getting a whole lot of press on this. He should. And so Monsters, Inc., and I know Pixar's and Disney's been getting a little bit of flack lately because they've been going back to sequels. There was Cars 2, and Planes is coming out later this year. And I know Brave, even though Brave won Best Animated Feature, was not the Best Animated Feature film last year. Wreck-It Ralph wants to talk to you about that. It's true.
He's going to wreck you.
And then that little dude will fix it.
Yeah.
With his girlfriend, voiced by Jane Lynch. All right, back to this. Watching this, it's a good film. It's not nearly as monumental as Monsters, Inc. Monsters, Inc. was a great animated adventure with a lot of heart, and of course a lot of that has to do with character Boo, which was about the same age as my daughter, if not younger, when that movie came out. It doesn't feel like as bad a cash in as Cars 2, and hopefully not as bad as what Planes looks like.
Yeah, that looks bad.
Yeah, I know, but they talk. And they're inanimate objects.
They have the same eyes as the cars.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do. And they have the same eyes in Monsters U. Or I, if you're Mike Wazowski.
Where's the money, Wazowski?
That was a good movie.
Good, not great. And I'm still recommending it. But I think the bar was set so high with Monsters, Inc. and with Finding Nemo. And I know they're going to make Finding Dory.
Is that this year or next year?
I don't know. Ellen DeGeneres keeps talking about it every other day. You have to check with the Ellen expert around our house. She's called Emma.
Oh, okay.
You can check see if there's a release date on that while you're working over there.
All right.
You're done Googling Herb Alpert album covers. It's fun to watch. I will say this. The one thing that it does capture that I had not thought about in a long time, Paul, was the concept of orientation. The way and I remember this was the big Atticus Scout moment with my daughter was I said, Emma, the people that you meet during orientation and during the first day of classes might not be the same people that you meet and hang out with 4 years from then, end of the semester, you might not want to hang out with these people. So
you're saying there are a lot of extra characters? Or
not extra
characters.
I mean, there's new characters because there's a whole gaggle of monster fraternities.
Ah.
Yes, although there's no hazing, and there are no
pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, there are no scenes involving olives and people's body parts and martini glasses, and that noise. None of that. But they're little. I mean, there are some frat party moments, and there's nothing objectionable about it. Don't worry, folks. It's college. It's not Penn State. So there's college hilarity. I believe, Kobe, it would be college hijinks.
Hijinks, yes.
There are some college hijinks.
Would it be, in the words of Joe Shearer, various chicanery?
There is various forms of chicanery. I believe I think the most controversial thing is a mascot is stolen. Oh, I think there's that. And
that'll happen in college.
That will happen in college. Although trying to take a Wolverine in Michigan would be very daunting, or a Spartan, really. Mm. So, you could grab a Hoosier.
Hey, come here.
All right. Hey, I got him. Or the Oaken Bucket, I guess. That would be the big, no, you don't care.
Okay. No, not really.
Not really.
And things like, this is great for radio, but it's like this big. Yeah.
Let the record show, Kobe put his hands about maybe a foot
less
apart.
Less than shoulder width apart.
If you have really narrow shoulders, what is that?
It's literally this big. Man, we need to be on TV.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I wish we did. Anyway, it's a fun film. Not as monumental as the first one, but it's still worth checking out. And of course, the short film beforehand. If you remember the short film last year, which was about the Paper Man, which was it could be on a double bill, although that would be a short double bill, two short films together because it's short. but I will, without giving away too much, it involves umbrellas, and it's very cute, very nice. And of course, I've been informed that I should pick up the next volume of Pixar Shorts on DVD and Blu-ray.
Oh yes, pick up your shorts. So as yes. as a semi-adult. I really like.
Oh, you fit right in here, sir.
Yeah. So I really liked Monsters, Inc.
Yeah.
Am I gonna like this one?
Not nearly as much.
Okay.
As the first one.
So it's more for kids.
Is that a matter of more for kids? I think there was more adventure. Remember in Monsters, Inc., there were moments that, especially like the swinging doors.
Yeah.
I mean, there were action scenes. And this,
like, really clever.
Yeah, really clever. This one, they're frat contests. There was a big thing about the big scare-off.
Ah.
And in order to get into the scaring program, because it's very tough business to get in the scare program. Almost as hard as Ball State journalism. So they have to be, the fraternities have to do these series of games with one another. And I mean, that's fun, but that's not really.
Is it an academic decathlon like in Billy Madison?
Not nearly as obnoxious as Billy Madison. Oh, okay. So there's that, but I don't think there's a sense of danger as big an adventure because they were fighting Randall and Water
Moose. So it's maybe not as heartwarming?
Not as heartwarming. Okay. It's fun. But just
it's
not as heartwarming.
It's a frothy summer.
It is a frothy summer. Apparently, we this is the
frothy.
Time for froth. Frothy.
Frothy.
Frothy monsters. Picture it.
Frothy.
That's pretty good.
Let's get a milkshake.
Oh,
I'll drink
I'm
your milkshake.
Now.
It's true.
Drink it up.
That's right. So
Finding Dory 2015, Planes 2013. That's what we have to look forward to.
Nothing in 2014?
I have no idea.
You don't care?
No.
Not really.
Unless it's going to be like Ratatouille.
No, oh, nobody. You don't
so
want
good.
That.
Really? I'd watch it.
Oh, yeah.
No, I love Ratatouille. Make something else. Seen it. Move on. Don't need a two.
Definitely don't need a third Cars.
Yeah, don't need Hangover 3 either, but I didn't see that. So, anyway, that's
Three Car Garage. Yes.
Oh. What?
Yeah, they could call it that.
Are you giving titles now, like Fast and Furious?
Yes, Six Fast, Six Furious, and Three Cars.
Dumb.
Garage.
So, all right. So that is opening. Also opening today, the big one. Although I'll be intrigued to see how it does box office wise. We have World War Z, and the Z stands for, of course,
the zombies.
Yeah, zombies. Yeah.
I didn't know until I saw a trailer of.
You didn't figure it out?
No, I had no idea until they started. Showing the trailers that had like the people like spilling out like you know
I will say
up
this
against the wall and
for
whatnot.
And yeah obviously it's you know a heavy CG film that image is a little unsettling And I mean that as a compliment. This is a film, of course, that stars and is produced by Brad Pitt. Yes,
really?
Yes. Mm. He's putting some serious coin into this one. He's not the only one. There are others. And it's directed by Mark Foster, who gave us Quantum of Solace, the second Daniel Craig James Bond film. He also did Monsters Ball, not Monsters, Inc., although I like to see him direct that. But yeah, it's the end of the world as we know it, another R.E.M. lyrics, but this time it's a plague of zombies, and these are the 28 days later really fast zombies.
Really fast.
Really fast. Yeah, as Kobe, as you see in the trailer, there is a scene where, it's actually set in Jerusalem. They had, not really giving away anything, but apparently Israel knew ahead of time that this was going to happen, so they built walls around the country, and then you just see hundreds of mad rabid zombies running up a wall and running, climbing on top of each other.
Oh my God, that's kind of terrifying.
It is terrifying. The setup for the film, of course, Brad Pitt is, well, he's brought in because he has special skills. Not quite Liam Neeson skills, but skills nonetheless. He's not on the phone threatening anybody. But he's there with wife and two kids, and they're trying to get out of Philadelphia. And that's also in the trailer, where just it looks like every other end of the world.
So what
film.
Type of skills? Like IT skills, or he speaks foreign languages, or what? Oh, you're not going to say.
I'm not telling you. He's got
zombie knowledge skills.
No, he doesn't. So he's brought in. Guess what? He's brought in for one more job.
Because he's about to retire.
Well, he's been retired. He's got the nice house. He makes pancakes. He makes beer. And I know there's thousands of women and a few men right now imagining Brad Pitt making pancakes. You're welcome.
Yeah.
nobody in this room. But he's brought in because of his skills. He worked with the United Nations, and that's convoluted. The first half hour is pretty solid as far as setting things up and getting the action going. Then it feels like it turns into Brad Pitt video game, because we go to Korea, not Koreatown, Korea. Then we go to Israel. Then we go to a few other locations where they're running from the zombies and fighting the zombies and trying to find a cure for the zombies.
So how does he get from all those locations, from one to the other, if the world is full of these crazy fast zombies?
He's not Batman.
No, because of his work with the government, he's able to get some strings
pulled. Air Force One.
Not Harrison Ford Air Force One, but he is able to get his family to safety on a battleship. Because apparently zombies
can't
swim, at least not hundreds of miles offshore.
Like the Bumble.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
In Rudolph?
Yes, exactly like the Bumble.
Bumbles don't swim.
Bumbles could have been in World War Z. But then it turns into a big video game of them just running and hiding and dodging. And then we get hit with a heavy message at the very end. Also frothy.
Everybody loves a zombie flick with a message. Yes.
Well, and only at the beginning and only at the end. It could have really taken itself extremely serious about a statement on the planet as we know it. And at least it saves it for the very beginning and the very end, so you can still watch Brad Pitt running away from zombies.
And making pancakes.
Well, he only does it at the beginning. I don't think he makes pancakes for zombies.
So there's a message with the pancakes? Is that what you're saying?
No message with the pancakes. Okay. We don't get the stare into the batter. That would be cool if they did.
Slowly stirring.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a where's Mike Perry's? Do we have Mike Perry's reaction?
Yeah.
I think that sums it up pretty well.
It's a nice way to spend 2 hours in a movie theater that you won't wish you got back.
There you go.
Yeah, there is that. And I haven't gotten my overdose of zombies yet, partly because I haven't watched The Walking Dead. But I'm getting close to meeting my quota. I don't think I'm going to need zombies for a while.
Yeah, I think I've been there for a little while, I have to say. But did you see there was a recent news story that involved zombies? It was somewhere, let's say it was in the South, and some people were picketing something, and the people opposed to those picketers showed up as zombies, like 300 people dressed as zombies. Just to like,
and they
wreck
screamed
the
about
picketing.
Sparta.
No,
oh no, that's
zombies exactly. Don't speak.
Oh right. Well, they say brains.
Oh,
well, some
do.
Brains. Yeah, exactly. Or pancakes. Or in Kobe's case, cheeseburger. All right. So yeah, there's that. Also opening in theaters today. I had a double feature this morning. Did not see Gina because she's not here. But It felt like one of those mornings where we saw something right before the show. But the new film from Sofia Coppola called The Bling Ring. And this is based on an article by Vanity Fair. And by the way, I should mention, while we're shamelessly plugging Vanity Fair, apparently there's a really good write-up about the making of World War Z in Vanity Fair. That was apparently a troubled set. And one of my colleagues who's been on the show, Jeff Marker, said, so I talked to him about the show earlier today, was for as much money that they spent and a lot of cutting that they've had to do, it's a coherent story. So, but how incoherent can you be of Brad Pitt running away from zombies?
I'm sorry, zombies running amok is going through my head.
That's okay. But this is another film, this time based on an article by Vanity Fair about a group of teenagers who go into celebrity homes because apparently they have no guards and no security systems that they use, and they go into places like the houses of Orlando Bloom and Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan was apparently another, Rachel Bilson, and
so this is a real thing.
This was a thing that actually did happen, and the film stars Emma Watson, Leslie Mann is in it, and it was adapted for the stage. You're on the stage. It's adapted for the screen and directed by Sofia Coppola, of course, who gave us Lost in Translation and The Virgin Suicide. She also made Marie Antoinette. So we have a film about a group of vapid teenagers stealing from vapid celebrities. It was really hard for me to really care about anybody involved in this.
I am doing so much self-editing right now, I can't tell you.
Well, thank you, because we're on radio.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the one thing of note is, you know, it's a non-Potter film from Emma Watson, and she's got an American accent, and that's really about it. And Leslie Mann is not nearly as irritating in this as a mom as she was in This Is 40. And of course, at the very end, and again, it's not really a spoiler because it happened three, 4 years ago, of, I guess, in your own way, you can become a celebrity by doing something as ridiculous as this.
You're 15 minutes.
Yeah, you're 15 minutes, or then some if you are really sad and try to drag it out. So I'm sure there are going to be people younger than me and younger than Mr. Slagle that would probably enjoy this film. This might be for some mall dwellers their first caper film, or their first crime, Bonnie and Clyde, or their first Sugar and Spice. I don't know. I know it wasn't made for me. And by the way, when I was there at 1 o'clock, apparently the creepy old guy Emma Watson fan club were not there in the theaters either, because I was the oldest one in the theater by a good decade. I love those moments. So,
really? You do?
Well, I've
okay, that was sarcasm.
No.
It's also an art film.
It's not. Well, technically, one would say Sofia Coppola is an art film director, but not this one. But I remember in the 80s being the youngest one in the theater by a good 20, 30 years, seeing films like Amadeus, and I remember The Last Emperor. There was nobody close to my age.
So this
age
is just the flip side of that
this
whole
is
scenario.
The flip side, but it's you don't want to be the lone old man when you're reviewing the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants film.
Oh, yeah, that sounds bad.
Y'all love it, so...
I like Blake Lively more than that film. No, but yeah, I remember there's always a thing where any time there was a film like that and the critics would all sit together and we'd all bring notebooks even though we didn't all just take notes, and we'd talk loudly about Shop. Because the only thing missing was we wanted to hold up a sign that says, not creepy.
Yeah, but that itself could be creepy, honestly.
It could be, but at least we're ethical about our creepiness.
Okay.
So that's the show. Film sociology, or ethics about creepiness. So, Mr. IU, what is going on at IU Cinema and other things? If people don't have plans in there and they don't have tickets to Spam-A-Lot, shame on them.
Oh, shame on you. Well, right. Tonight and Saturday at IU Cinema, 7 o'clock tonight, Saturday, and 3 o'clock tomorrow as well, we have the 2012 fantasy foreign language drama, Blanca Neves.
Is that about your fiance?
No.
Sorry.
We also have, at the IMA tonight, if you have tickets, good. If not,
it's sold out.
You're too late. It is sold out. Dirty Dancing tonight. And
or I'm sorry, as Nuvo called it, the prequel to Dirty Dancing Havana Nights. And Jarrett Moore, anytime somebody brings up Dirty Dancing, we think of you because, well, Mr. Moore has a theory about Dirty Dancing that I don't think we're just going to get into right now. But I'll just say, while you're at it, why don't you rent Summer of 42 and Lifeguard? Anyway, go on.
Anyway, That's the IMA. And tonight at Landmark Keystone, we have, and tomorrow night as well, Pulp Fiction.
At midnight.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing.
Spice World next week. Get ready.
You're not going to that.
I'm not going to that. No,
I'm not going to that. And by the way, special kudos to everybody who came out last weekend for The Room.
The Room. That was
I know
good.
You two were there. You and First Week Bianca were there on Saturday. I went both nights. And first night, have you been to The Room yet, Paul?
I have not. Tell me about this room.
Oh, dude, why don't I explain?
He doesn't know what it is.
Why don't I explain the plot while you get the show ID? Because
okay.
we're not going to play the interview. It is the current So Bad It's Hysterical film. Only it's a melodrama written, directed, and starring and producing one guy who really thought he was making high art. And he has then since embraced the silliness. And he's been a guest on this show, I'm happy to say. And it's audience participation. You throw plastic spoons, you throw footballs, you yell at the screen. It is right up there with Rocky Horror as one of my all-time favorite midnight movie experiences.
Cool beans.
So
yeah.
Do we have...
Probably the most fun you're going to have in a theater watching a movie.
Yes.
Here we go.
Hey, everyone. This is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now to Film Sociology at the WFYI Indianapolis.
There you go.
That's him. Mm-hmm. But there were more people Friday night than there were Saturday night.
Yeah, we didn't have a packed house.
However, Saturday night, way more spoons.
Yeah?
Way more spoons. In fact, there was a cinematic moment. We were in the front row with our crew. Yes, we have a crew of people, Brock and Amber and the rest of the gang. But there was a great moment. I was in the front row of the back section, the second section, not the front section. And you've seen this shot in movies where usually it is involving rain or snow or rose or leaves or something like this. But I'm looking up at the ceiling during a particular moment, and there's just hundreds of white plastic spoons flying over and flying onto me.
Yep.
It was spectacular.
Yep.
So,
pretty good.
And they are now, apparently somebody downtown is going to be showing The Room. I've not received confirmation on this yet. Kelly, keep us updated on that. But so hopefully that will happen. If it does, we will let you know. And then, of course, probably Landmark will show it again in October. But yeah, kudos to Landmark for having midnight movies in the summer and the fall. It is a lost art, and we really, really appreciate it. And then at the Tibbs Drive-In, because we're also pro drive-in here at Film Sociology.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got there?
Oh, man.
They have four screens.
Everything that's out in the regular theaters, but you could see.
Really?
At a drive-in.
Bling Ring is there, and Much Ado About Nothing?
Bling Ring is not there. Much Ado About Nothing is not, so I guess not everything.
So what is there, smart guy?
We've got Monsters U. We have The Internship, if you want to see that.
Those are together?
Yeah, that's on one screen. Screen two, we have World War Z and Six Fast, Six Furious.
Oh, letters screen and numbers.
Three, uh-huh.
It's like Sesame Street. Sponsored by the letter Z and the number six.
Screen three, Man of Steel, and Now You See Me, and screen four, The End and The Purge.
This is The End and The Purge. Ooh.
Where is Tibbs?
On the outskirts. It's in the darkness on the edge of town.
The darkness.
what's the address up there,
I'm
Mr.
Slagle? I'm looking for it. This website is
I haven't been to a drive-in in years.
I was saying, Paul, do you remember the last drive-in experience you had?
No, actually, no. I mean, it was that long ago.
Everybody go to a drive-in.
I feel remiss.
480 South Tibbs Avenue, Indianapolis, 46241.
That's why it's called Tibbs. Oh.
Yeah, yes. As opposed to, no, State Road 420 drive-in. Can't do, as I learned, you know, you can't do the porn names or the soap opera names if you live out in rural Indiana, because having State Road 680 is a name.
Not as sexy.
Not as sexy or interesting. Nuh-uh. So. All right, so that is happening. Let's take a short break. We'll talk about what is new on DVD and Blu-ray, and we'll talk about Spamalot. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
That's the perfect audio for that.
It is. It is.
You miss it in theaters, it's in the video store.
That you were
get it.
Very thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler is probably has a picture of Birdman on his punching bag right now.
Yep.
Not happy.
He's mad.
He is mad. I'm going to take it out on poor Ben. I'm sorry. Welcome to NBA Talk. welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Welcome to all those who are on HD1 wondering where we were. We're here on HD2, and we're also available as a podcast, and we're on iTunes. Anyway, I'm here with Paul Hansen of Spamalot, and Kobe Slagle's hanging out with me, and we're going to talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. Well, there's two films of note that you should rent. One is, and I was really surprised at how long this film lasted here in Indianapolis. And it's the drama Quartet, which was the directorial debut of Dustin Hoffman, and it's set in an old folks' home for artists.
Loved that movie.
And some of them, of course, it helps when you have Maggie Smith, Tom Courtney, Billy Connolly, Michael Gambon is in this, and they do an annual fundraiser event for some of the singers, and Maggie Smith comes in, who's a little embarrassed to be in an old folks' home, and it's kind of the will she, won't she, but it's from the same writer as The Dresser, which also introduced the world, a lot of folks, to Tom Courtney back in 1983. And, it is a very charming, grown-up movie where the folks that live in this house, they're not the caricature of Betty White or Cloris Leachman. They're not the feisty old people, except for Billy Connolly. But it is a sweet story about people growing old together in a little space.
Well, it's very subtle, and it's also a cool thing about what happens when artists age out of their craft.
Correct.
You know, and what sort of broke my heart, Maggie Smith, I don't want to give anything away, obviously, but, the fortunes that one amasses are imagined to be much higher than they actually are for any artist. And so to sort of see the reverse side of that is heartbreaking, you know, for a diva to now be in this world and having to deal with that.
And by the way, true diva, not the one that's made up by popular culture. So you can only say diva,
opera,
it involves
diva.
Opera. Yeah, because that's the one and only. So, yeah, I was really glad I got to see this. And the fact that I think it stayed at Landmark for over a month.
Oh, it was such a beautiful film. So subtle.
Yep.
And funny.
Yeah, and one of the things I always you always hear, like I said, this was the directorial debut of Dustin Hoffman, mm-hmm. although I believe he worked a little bit on Straight Time, but I can't prove it, and you just have to ask him yourself. But actors who are directors obviously know the craft, the acting craft, and so that's why a lot of actors like working with those types of directors because they have been there. And he really has a wonderful time with these older actors, and they get a chance to showcase themselves in something other than feisty old person. Mm-hmm. So definitely worth renting. Go
yes,
check that. Yes,
yes. Yes, yes, yes.
The other one is the English language debut of director Chan-Wook Park called Stoker. This is the creepy Southern Gothic film with Nicole Kidman, Matthew Good, and I'm going to butcher it, Mia Wasikowska, or as you know her, Alice from Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton version. Mm. And one of the daughters from The Kids Are All Right. But it's Mia's dad dies, and uncle shows up out of nowhere, and uncle and mom, and it's not Hamlet, wind up having a weird relationship. And it's a creepy atmospheric film. It's not. I don't think it's freaky, Kobe. I think you might be okay in renting this because I know your scary freaky meter is you have a scary freaky meter. We should get that sponsored. The Sun King Kobe Scary Creepy Meter.
I see the coasters now.
And the coasters.
Mm-hmm.
Great group. Let's see. wonderful vocal group. But it does capture the creepy atmosphere. Jackie Weaver shows up very briefly in this. And so, yeah, it's a little unnerving, and you'll feel better about your own family after watching this family.
I'm not so sure.
Wow. Maybe we should send Mr. Park to film Euro Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no.
So, okay. So then there's The Last Exorcism Part 2, which is about as ridiculous a title.
Still exercising.
Yeah, which is about as ridiculous a title as I Still Know What You Did Last Summer or Two Summers Ago for that. So... I did not rent that. I rented these two films back to back, and let me tell you, sometimes being a film critic, not fun. It's a job. Started with Jack the Giant Slayer, which I know Chris Lloyd of the app was talked about and said he liked it. It also doesn't help. This is, of course, one of the serious-looking film action versions of children's stories that we grew up with, like Snow White and the Huntsman, and Mirror Mirror, and Red Riding Hood. And it came out last week, and I actually recommended it because it was so damn silly. Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Have a few drinks and watch it. I would say have the drinks first. Most definitely have the drinks first.
That looked really interesting, actually.
Well, and the thing that's surprising about it, which I didn't know going in, because that's Jeremy Renner getting a big check, and Gemma Arterton and Famke Janssen is in it as well. But two of the producers are Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, which as soon as I saw that, I went, okay, something's up. And I think they realize, everybody involved knows they're in a silly... They have a film with a silly title, and they're not going to make it any more than what it actually is. I mean, Jeremy Renner does a Matrix-esque dodge of an arrow. So, and I think it's a little tongue-in-cheek.
So is that the silliness?
Yeah. I think it's a tongue-in-cheek action film that knows it's being tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
I wish there was some fun in Jack the Giant Slayer. It is directed by Bryan Singer, who gave us The Usual Suspects and X-Men. And you have really good talents that have nothing to do, like Ian McShane and Ewan McGregor and Stanley Tucci. And it's basically making a giant epic, almost like a 300 with Jack and the Beanstalk. And in fact, there are huge battle scenes that just go on way too long, and just not a twinkle, not a glimmer of making a silly
magic
story. Yeah, it takes itself way too serious, and that's kind of a bummer. And then, ladies and gentlemen, I rented Movie 43.
What is that?
Movie 43, look it up. It is, it's being billed as the Kentucky Fried Movie of this generation. However, there is a slew of big-name people in this. Hugh Jackman, Halle Berry, Terrence Howard, Kate Winslet, Greg Kinnear, Dennis Quaid. I don't know what favors they had to pull, but it's a series of skits, and that... I'll make an example of this. There's a through line between Dennis Quaid as a filmmaker and Greg Kinnear as a producer, and Quaid is pitching all these different ideas to him, and one of which is a romantic dinner, first date between Kate Winslet and Hugh Jackman, and Hugh Jackman has a certain body part hanging from his neck. Now it's one thing to do that kind
elbow?
Of. Huh?
Elbow? He has an elbow hanging from his neck.
He has, you know what? They look like two elbows. Let's leave it at that. And let's take that joke and make it.
Why am I thinking of Claire Wiltshire? I don't know.
And make it twice as long and run it literally into the ground.
Oh.
Or into different parts of the table.
One joke that actually should take about 30 seconds.
And goes on for about 5 minutes.
Got it.
And that's pretty much the crust of this film, is taking really gross jokes and stretching them out way too long. Mm-hmm. The one thing that almost made me giggle, I did not laugh. I hate, there are certain films, they can be terrible films, but if they made me laugh out loud once, I'm like, damn, can't be the worst film of the year. So, but there is one, Kobe, you will appreciate, that involves Terrence Howard. He plays a basketball coach, and it's the Disney-esque period piece, like Glory Road or Remember the Titans, and it looks like the mid 60s, and it's the all black team going in for the championship against the all white team, and Terrence and of course the players are not sure if they're going to win the big game or not, and Terrence Howard said, you guys are white, you're black, you're gonna win the game. Now,
and this is a recent film?
This was a film that came out earlier this year, not screened for press. Now, apparently the short films are directed by different people. There's folks like Griffin Dunn, Bob Odernick, Elizabeth Banks directed something, Brett Ratner, Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers. And apparently they were accumulating these films for a matter of a couple of years. In fact, there's an article, I believe Richard Gere is in this, and he publicly dismissed the film, saying that I think he was doing it as a favor for somebody. Uh-huh. So, but I think of there's a scene in, speaking of Monty Python, we'll get to it.
Okay.
Monty Python and the Meaning of Life, there's a great moment of the rugby match between the students and the faculty. We don't get that in the basketball movie. I would love to have seen the black kids going up against the 5'3" crew-cutted white kids in 1960s basketball. Because we are the face of white basketball.
Yes.
So, anyway, is really painfully unfunny with a lot of big-name stars. At least Kentucky Fried Movie was funny. So I'm going to pull up my black socks and tell you damn kids to get off my lawn. Kobe, I might make you watch Kentucky Fried Movie.
No!
Yeah, it's really not funny. Really not a lot of fun at all.
But
so,
you said you laughed once, though, right?
No, I did not laugh once. If I laugh once at a film, it can't be completely worthless.
Oh.
No.
You were talking generalities.
I'll give you an example. Because I have a bet with a friend, Jeff Marker, who I've alluded to. He is an Ohio State fan. I am a Michigan fan because I grew up there. Shut up. But we have a bet every year on the Michigan Ohio State game.
Mm-hmm.
And the loser has to watch the film selected by the winner.
Oh, no, that's dangerous.
Yeah, that's very dangerous. And we have inflicted cinematic pain on each other for years.
Ugh.
And one that he selected for me on one particular year, which he deemed the worst film of that year, was a film called Strange Wilderness. And this was it was Steve Zahn and I think Ernest Borgnine has one of Borgnine's last films. But it was a kind of a gross out comedy involving something that's so not Wild Kingdom. And there was one joke that made me laugh out loud. And I picked something else as the worst film of that year. But
so does the movie have to be of that year or can it be of any time?
It can be of any time.
If you and I had a bet, I could make you watch Dancer in the Dark painfully.
Oh, the Lars von Trier musical?
No, it's not a musical.
Yes, it is. With Bjork?
Yeah, Bjork.
Yes, Bjork and everybody's favorite factory worker, Catherine Deneuve. I actually own Dancer in the Dark.
Oh, that is so tragic.
It is a tragic musical about a woman basically sacrificing herself for her kids' eyesight.
It gets more and more depressing with each passing scene.
That's not even the most depressing Lars von Trier film ever made.
Oh, holy cow.
No, not at all. So,
see, that's what I make people watch when I want to pick on them.
I see. Well, that didn't work. Sorry.
Yeah.
But there was the other one was it was Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star, because Don Johnson, who we are pro Don Johnson here at Film Sociology, mainly because of Django Unchained. Mm-hmm. But he made me laugh, and Christina Ricci made me laugh because she had the thankless part of being the girl. It's a brutally unfunny film, but those two made me laugh. I'm like, man, you just disqualified the film. Way
can't
to go.
Be the worst.
Thanks a lot. So anyway, but let's talk about something that is genuinely naturally funny and a musical not a tragic musical.
Monty Python?
It's Spamalot.
Spamalot!
So, Paul, I gotta ask, first off, how many roles do you play in this?
I only have one role
really?
In this musical. Yes,
okay.
Indeed. Yes.
Because wasn't sure how big the cast for this was, and you know how many multiple roles there were going to be, that sort of thing.
Oh yeah, no. Well, the whole thing about Monty Python is that actors do play multiple roles, and you recognize the same actor.
And you scream Carol Cleveland.
I scream. I have not screamed that in years.
I did last night. But anyway.
Oh, okay. So no, it's a great role. It's I get to play Patsy.
Yay!
Who is
nice coconuts?
Yeah. Well, thank you. And in the show, I play the coconuts too.
Now, are they actual coconuts?
Oh, yes.
Somebody in props got coconuts and
cut them and drilled them and scraped them, and they get a laugh every night.
Outstanding. Every
night. Yeah, and what I love about my part, frankly, is that I have so little to do, but I'm on stage constantly and just reacting, and I get a lot of laughs.
That's you, Kobe. You're on the show every week with no coconuts. Yes, so of course it is the musical version of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but there's other non-Grail moments that I think if you're a Python fan.
Oh, totally. Yeah. They pop up, and you know the audience is always full of people who know Monty Python, and you know I've talked to a lot of people, and you either love Monty Python, which I do,
uh-huh.
or you don't quite get it. Both amuse me. Interestingly.
Well, my wife, and this was a great moment at the Soucy House last night. I must say my lovely wife Lynn just got back from a conference, and because we are seeing the show tonight, shameless plug. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bob.
Bob Harbin.
Yeah.
Half an AM.
Bob directs.
7:30.
Yeah. She thought it'd be a good idea to watch the film again. Every husband wants to hear their wife say, we should watch Holy Grail now.
And then football right after, right?
No, there was actually game 7 was last night, the other night. But so anyway, it was fun watching the three of us do it. And now, this was not Emma's first time watching it, my daughter. She first watched the Holy Grail when she was 5. And we go back to, we were at the Nouveau office, and then theater critic Lisa Godier had received, it was when the tour was coming to the Mira.
Sure.
And she had what was the best press kit ever sent.
Was there goofy stuff in there?
There was a can of Spam with the Terry Gilliam animation of the characters. And other miscellaneous things that I forget, but the thing that really stood out in my 5-year-old daughter's mind mm-hmm. was the Killer Bunny hand puppet.
Oh, yes.
And she said, "What's that?" And I explained to her what it is and explained to her the movie, and she goes, "Can I see it?"
It's vicious.
And I said, "I'll show you. This is the hard-hitting dad that I am. I am pop culture Atticus Finch." and I said, "All right, I'll show you the scene. I don't know if you're going to get the movie, but I'll show you the one scene." And I said, "Now you got to promise me you're not going to freak out like a week later if we're outside and there's a rabbit going across the road." She said, "No, I'll be fine." She actually said that, and showed her the Killer Bunny scene, laughed her head off.
Excellent.
And I was a little hesitant at first, and then I remembered. I was 5 when my dad took me to see the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
And I think it was University of Michigan Flint. And as I learned from that age, and also the PBS station in Flint, Michigan, that was something they aired every time during Pledge Drive. I still have, I think I retired it, I hope. But somewhere there was a Betamax copy of
Betamax.
Channel 20's. Broadcast of the Holy Grail with the pledge breaks, with the really long your favorite, Kobe, the 20-minute epic things. Let's make a 90-minute film 2.5 hours with pledge breaks. So and that was one of the first things I ever recorded. It was very valuable for my upbringing.
Oh yeah.
And but as a kid, it's all the physical stuff, the killer
right.
bunny, the Trojan rabbit, the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
All the physical stuff. By the time I was 10, I wanted to live in the Castle Anthrax, and I wanted Lynn to dress like the Castle Anthrax, and it just every year new things came to, you know, a little light bulb went off in my head. I remember being in high school when I finally understood The Communist Peasant.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just a film that just, and a story that delivers something new all the time.
Well, that's what I love about Monty Python, because I was 4 when, remember the Flying Circus? Monty Python's Flying Circus was on TV.
We were
on
also watching those, yeah.
Yeah, of course. And I remember being in the room with adults, and they were all laughing, and all of the slapstick is great as a kid, and I was laughing at that, and I didn't understand all that stuff, but I watch it now, you know, some of those things on YouTube. And I remember watching it then, and the same things are funny now. What does that say about me?
Not that you're fine.
Okay.
You're fine.
And your daughter passed the Monty Python test.
She did. I've just bought earlier at Christmas, actually, for myself, I bought the complete Flying Circus series.
Oh, I'm
so
jealous.
Right now we're going through, we're on disc 5 now, which I believe is 1970.
Is that father-daughter time then?
It is father-daughter time. Lynn will sit in occasionally, but I mean, she's only, Lynn is also, she made a point of saying this when we were dating and we got married and we had Emma. She was like, "Oh my God, I'm married to the guy who quotes Python." Not her favorite guys in school or in college or in life. But
they're the best.
And now she has a husband and a daughter that Ooh. Quotes that. But I remember on, it was one of the The documentary. There was one of the epic documentaries that they did about Python, and they had a greatest hits reel. You know, a parrot sketch and a fish slapping dance and argument, and you know, so showed her those. Those were her first introductions to it, the greatest hits, and kind of like the episodes. You know, some of them she gets, like she's telling me right now, she's not really crazy about the interview, the news segments and the interview segments. And I said, yeah, but those were what those news shows were like in the 60s. Somebody in a bad jacket and a bad pipe and, you know, doing really silly interviews with people of various whatevers. So some of them she likes more than others, obviously.
Yeah.
So as time goes on. Kobe, what you have a Python history?
Actually, not really, not much.
You gotta work on that.
Holy Grail and why I forget what
you were not. Didn't I try to make you watch Life of Brian and you didn't get into it?
Couldn't really get into it.
Kidding.
You should watch it on Sunday or on Christmas. Really, then I'll get a thing from Fair Sweet Bianca. I would say maybe first off you should go see Spamalot. That's running this weekend and next weekend.
Yep.
Sunday matinee this Sunday.
Sunday this Sunday. Yes.
See, I don't even have a flyer in front of me. I would say maybe start with and now for something completely different, which is their 1972 film, which was basically greatest hits. Mm-hmm. It was because they were on PBS and independent stations on TV in the early 70s in 1969. And then I think it was Columbia decided to just put out a movie of, let's just film some of your favorite skits and get it out there for the people. And then, of course, there's Holy Grail, Life of Brian, we'll talk about another time. But also then Meaning of Life, which talks about birth through death, according to Python. And it's one of those, some segments are better than others, but it's still pretty darn good. So there.
Well, speaking of Life of Brian.
Yes.
And excerpts into this wonderful show that I'm in that people laugh hysterically at, I get to sing a song from Life of Brian. Can you name what that song probably
Every
is?
Every Sperm is Sacred.
No. try again. It involves crucifixes.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Yes.
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 No, I know Every Sperm is Sacred from Life, Meaning of Life. I get it. So, And there was also a, I think it came out on DVD last year, but there was the Eric Idle organized a opera oratorio at Royal Albert Hall. It was called He's Not the Messiah. He's a Very Naughty Boy, and that also has elements of non Life of Brian stuff coming into play.
Yeah.
How was the prep work for the song? Because that's one everybody knows.
It is. And you know what? That was not daunting at all because I have to tell you that something – it's an anthem, isn't it? It's a way of life.
Does the audience sing along?
You know, they start to, yeah. Especially the little whistle bit.
Yes.
I hear them a little bit, but the reverb on my microphone is so loud that I can't really – I would love for everybody to sing along and like – do flashlights or lighters back and forth. That would be awesome.
Or spoons if you're in the
spoons.
Although I don't think we should throw crucifixes or nails. How are your hands doing?
No,
hands
fine.
Are fine. Okay. they don't drop a Trojan rabbit on you.
No. See, the song is lifted, but in the context of this, I won't spoil it. You're going to see it tonight.
Let's have it. But it just sounds like it's a rollicking good time.
It is. And, you know, the audience roars. It honestly roars with laughter. And that is the most rewarding thing that any actor could experience, I have to tell you.
And you've done quite a bit.
A little bit.
Come on now. You have a good resume.
No, but this is great fun. You know, Claire Wilcher, oh, my gosh, last night. This woman was on fire. First, we know that she has an incredible voice.
Yes.
We know that she has intense comedic timing. Last night, she has this big solo number in front of the main curtain. It blew the house away. And I bow right before her, and I got a little, yay, that's great.
And then I introduce her.
I just could have walked off stage. Nobody would have noticed. Mm. She's awesome.
Now, do the crowds respond bigger on different bits than others from night to night?
It's actually pretty consistent. And what I love about this show is that it's so packed full of silly nonsense that there are different levels of laughs. There are lots of, you know, little tee. But I mean, you can tell that they're with the show and with the comedy the whole way through. You know, you can tell when they recognize a bit is coming, like the knights who say knee.
Yes.
They're
love
in there.
The knights who say knee.
They're
of course
in there,
you
man.
Do. Absolutely. kills me. Makes me giggle. I think of, and oh, there's also Monty Python Live at the Hollywood Bowl, which they toured. They toured for a while, and they did one at the Hollywood Bowl. And I remember John Cleese told a story of one time, it was like one of the first times they did a live show, and the audience was the same way for a while every night. There would be huge roars and then dead silence.
Because they're listening.
No, because they're mouthing along to the skit. And then huge things afterwards. And they're, why are they not laughing? What's wrong with that?
So, oh, yeah.
All right, so Spamalot is happening tonight, tomorrow night at 7:30 with a Sunday matinee at 3 o'clock. And then next Friday and Saturday.
At 7:30 at the Athenaeum.
So go to the Athenaeum, and then you can go to the Ratskeller. You can go to the Chatterbox afterwards. And this, you guys should jam at the Chatterbox.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bring coconut percussion.
You can get tickets at bobdirex.com. That's BOBDIREX.com.
Of course it's with an X.
Of course.
Hi, Bob. All right. We are going – actually, I want to – we have a few minutes, and we started the show with the theme from Sopranos, talking about dead people we like, and you know, untimely, quick, surprising death by actor James Gandolfini.
Very sad.
Very sad. Great working guy. Was a that guy for a long time before getting the Sopranos, and it was fun looking through. Of course, the first thing I noticed him in was he was, of course – Alabama's toughest opponent in True Romance. He's the one who has...
Aha! Yes, he was.
Yes, he was. See, ding! Love those moments. He was that guy. He was also the stuntman with a dad, who was also a dad. He actually went by the name Bear in Get Shorty. He was in The Juror, Night Falls on Manhattan, She's So Lovely, the cable remake of 12 Angry Men with George C. Scott and Jack Lemmon. I forgot he was in that. Mr. Wonderful, Fallen, The Mighty, Civil Action, 8mm, but I prefer, I still prefer Hardcore over that. The Man Who Wasn't There, the great Coen Brothers film, The Last Castle, there's Rod Lurie, the director, had some nice things to say about him on Facebook. The weird John Turturro-directed musical Romance and Cigarettes,
ugh.
odd film. The remake of All the King's Men, In the Loop, which I absolutely love. He's great in the Loop. He's called General Flintstone. The remake of The Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3. Killing Them Softly, which I really like. Not Fade Away, which is David Chase also directed that. And I know he was in Zero Dark Thirty, The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, which means I'm going to have to watch that. Because, yeah, making fun of magic in 2013. Wow. So anyway, hardworking guy. The guy won 3 Emmys. And of course, it was in the original cast of Gods of Carnage. God of Carnage.
Oh,
so
yeah.
With Jeff Daniels. So salute, James. Thank you. Great series and a fine actor. All right, we have enough time to go into the archives. This is where you find movies that you can buy online. You cannot get them in stores, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
In this case, it's $15. We go to 1969, and Kobe, I want you to look up this title because I can't remember the play that it's based on, but it's a psychological drama called The Mad Room, and it stars, you ready, Paul?
I am.
Stella Stevens. And Shelley Winters.
Ooh.
Yes, and Stella Stevens is two relatives of hers, a brother and sister. They murder their dad as children. They're sent to an institution. Then it's 18. The kids are 18. They're pushed out into the world, and Stella has them move in with her. She works and lives at a house of an eccentric widow millionaireess, played by 1969 Shelley Winters.
That is totally creeping me out.
And it, you know, it would if Rosemary's Baby hadn't already happened. And I'm not saying there's a Spawn of the Devil, but there were freakier, spookier movies. If it came out in 1960, you probably would have a case. Not in 1969. And it's based on a play. It's
remake of 1941's Ladies in Retirement.
That's right, Ladies in Retirement.
And it's called what again?
The Mad Room.
The Mad Room.
Not The Room.
Nope.
And it's also got a score by Dave Grusin. So there's that for you, Brian Hartz. All right, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Paul Hansen, thank you for hanging out. We'll see you at Spamalot.
Thanks so much.
This weekend and next weekend. So until next time, go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We go.
Go Tigers.
Good night, Fort Myers.